The Winners Club is the weekly podcast that shares the highlights and insights from some of the most meaningful and impactful conversations from the number one community on Clubhouse, The Winners Club.
So it's been an absolute pleasure to welcome Donna, and thank you very much, Anna, for bringing Donna up to the stage. Guys, just before we do start, go and have a look at Donna's profile, have a look at some of her accolade, have a look at what she's done, but let's get the show started anyway. So welcome, Donna. Anna, would you like to introduce your friend Donna?
Yes, Ashley. Good morning. Good morning, winners. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me, Ashley and Lucien. You've done an amazing job, as always. So great to see everybody here, dear friends on stage, and my dearest friend, Donna Smith. Welcome to the stage, Donna. Just so excited to be able to share you here with this incredible community that Ashley Shipman has personally curated and included me in it. And I feel like I gained recently a new family. So thank you so much again, Ashley, for having me. So everyone, Donna Smith is the former president of production and post-production at Universal Studios, the first and only woman to have ever held that position. She is the former CEO of Cinema Completions. And just to give you an idea, that's a bonding company where she could literally, the largest bonding company in the world, with offices in Los Angeles, London, and Sydney, she could bond unlimited number of movies up to $100 million per movie. She is the current United States Ambassador of Film to China, appointed by the Chinese government, along with actor Jackie Chan. She's also the current president of the Bali International Film Festival. She has been involved in the production of over 157 movies, dozens of which either were nominated or received Academy Awards. Some of the movies have included Rocky, Terminator, all three Matrix movies, Raging Bull, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, The English Patient, Schindler's List, Waterworld, just to name a few. And also, currently, she is the founder and CEO of Persnickety Productions, her own company. Welcome to the stage, Donna.
Thank you, my dear. That was a big deal.
So let me just, I'm going to get the conversation started by asking Donna a couple of questions, and then I'll hand the mic back over to Ashley. So just to kind of set the stage with this. So Donna and I met her, actually, I remember the first time I wanted to connect with Donna. She was such a big shot. And I was this literally young teen girl who was doing an event to honor Erin Brockovich when she received the movie. And imagine, I couldn't even get to Donna. I called her office and I was told that her secretary would try to get me to Donna. And I never was able to. Finally, we were able to get, I was able to get actually the third company that was involved in the production of Erin Brockovich, Jersey Films, with Danny DeVito and Carla Schomburg to come present her with the award. Now, fast forward only a couple of years after that, I was invited to be on the Harvard Women's Leadership Board at the Kennedy School. And there I see Donna. You can imagine my shock. I'm like, oh my God, here I am with Donna Smith. And then since then, we also, I was nominated to the International Women's Forum of the Trusteeship with the likes of Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright, and Donna is also a fellow member. So I've known Donna Smith for about 15 years, and she's been one of the most incredible women I've ever met and a dear, dear friend. Donna, I'd like to just kind of get everybody to understand how much of a big deal it is that you rose to become the first and only, sadly, I mean, it's great you were the first, but it is sad that you were the only female president of production and post-production at Universal Studios. So to give everybody an idea, she was handpicked by Lou Wasserman. And for those of you who may not know who he is known as the last mogul of Hollywood, even known as the king of Hollywood, the deal maker. He rose from being an usher at a cinema at the age of 20 to run MCA and to orchestrate the takeover or the purchase of Universal Studios and turned it into the most powerful studio at the time and literally ushered in major changes in every area of the studio. And guess what? He disrupted the status quo by approaching Donna Smith. Now, Donna, I'm curious to know, and I'm sure everybody's curious to know, as to how you were approached by Lou Wasserman, and what did you think when he came to you and asked you if you would consider? How did it come about? Can you share with us? Thank you.
Oh, indeed I will. Thank you, Anna, for all of that. It's a little rough to hear some of that, but it has been a very nice, rewarding career. I've had a good time. I never, ever thought about growing up to make movies. That just amazes me to this day. So I've been very blessed. Lou Wasserman was quite a gentleman. He has passed now, but I did my first Universal movie. It was an independent movie, so it wasn't for the studio. And it was called K-9, a Jim Belushi movie. And they wanted to do it in a certain manner. And anyway, they called me. And so I said, yes, I'd like to do that movie. So I signed on to do K-9. And I had to keep it away from the studio because we were working non-union. And it worked out. It just, everything about it. I moved the show to San Diego. So we shot there out of the Los Angeles area. And we were non-union, stayed on budget and on schedule. So everything about it was fine. Delivered the movie. It was absolutely exactly what the studio wanted. But about a month later, I had a call from Mr. Wasserman. I still call him Mr. Wasserman. From Mr. Wasserman's office. And to come for a meeting. So indeed, I went to this meeting at Universal, and I was still in the mode where it's kind of a kick to even find that your name is at the gate at a studio. That's it makes you just kind of feel warm and fuzzy to find that sort of thing. So I went to this meeting, and it was Lou and all the department heads of the motion picture division. And I do remember walking into the meeting and just saying, wow, all the big kids are here. And it was all men. It always is all men and me. And after a half an hour and just chatting, everybody was chatting and just being nice to me, I finally just said, I don't know why I'm here and I need to know. So who's going to come up first? And Lou said, well, we want you to run the motion picture division for the studio. I was very, very surprised at that because it's always a guy. It has never been a woman since Hollywood began. I didn't really know that at the time. I certainly didn't know that that is the position I was being offered. And I said no to it because I was doing a new Tom Cruise movie over at 20th Century Fox. So I said, no, I'm a filmmaker, and I don't want to be an executive at a studio, and I have to come to work in an elevator every day. So I don't really want to do that, thank you, but no thanks. Excuse me. And that didn't go over well, but that is how I left the meeting. And then I called my attorney and told him what I had said no to. I did ring my attorney after that meeting and just told him what I had said no to. And he's the one that he said, no, you've got to do this. You've got to do this because there's never been a woman in any of the studios that's ever had that position. So that was pretty intriguing. And in typical attorney form, he said, did you really say no? I said, yeah. I said, no, a hard no. And he said, good. He said, I'm going to call them tomorrow. I'm going to tell them I'm representing you. And you're going to take that job, which I had agreed to once I heard that no woman had ever had that. And he said, and your salary will double from whatever they offered you. It's such an attorney to think that way. But he did. He made that deal the next day. And so that happened. And at the beginning, I was supposed to be the production only, but then they also added post-production to the position. And that's a very difficult other element of filmmaking. So I had to, I had a lot of pressure about being production, getting movies made, as well as post-production, make sure that everything goes right in post-production. It was a big deal. Had a lot of fun.
That is amazing, Donna. That's just incredible. What an amazing, amazing story to share. And I can only imagine what you must have felt when you started working there. But I'd like to take us for a moment to the beginning, the young Donna Smith, all the way from Minnesota, a little town in Minnesota. And I know you had your head start with Sir Tyrone Guthrie, who was at the time the world's number one recognized opera and classical theater artistic director. And I'd love for everybody to hear how you went from being his assistant, helping him write a book, and really soaking up such a sophisticated man's world and understanding everything that he was about, and getting those nuances that you picked up from there, and how they helped you when you came to Hollywood and how you got started. So if you could share with us your journey, that would be wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm a Minneapolis girl, a Minnesota girl, and had not trained in terms of college for film work at all. But I did I had a wonderful position at the Guthrie Theater, which was and still is the United States' leading classical theater, Shakespeare, Moliere. Wonderful work like that. And Guthrie, it's named after Sir Tyrone Guthrie. And Guthrie called me one day. I had met him because I worked at the Art Center, which is attached to the theater in Minneapolis, Walker Art Center. And Guthrie said, come for a chat. I want to have a chat with you. So I had a chat with him, and he said, I want you to come be my assistant. And I honestly said to him, but I don't know how to do anything, because I had no idea how to do opera and how to do classical theater. I hadn't trained for that at all. But he just needed somebody to come and manage with him and work with him. So I wasn't about to say no to that. So I did indeed say yes to him. I resigned from the Art Center and went over to the Guthrie Theater. And working with Sir Tyrone, he was from, he's Irish. He was from Anna McCarrig, Ireland. And he had a jam factory in that wonderful little village. So our very first job together was we went home to Anna McCarrig, and he had to do the manufacturing of the jam for that season and started writing a book. And it was wonderful to work with the gentleman of such renown, to learn from him. And I did learn. I learned everything about theater and about opera. I worked with him for 5 years, met my husband at the Guthrie Theater. And when Guthrie's time was up with the theater, he had promised so many years that he would be with the theater. Gordon, my husband, and I decided to move to California just because of the weather. Minnesota weather is brutal. So we moved to California, and that's when I then landed on film. And my first film turned out to be Raging Bull, which won the Academy Award that year for many positions. And I was production coordinator on Raging Bull. So that started my whole film thing in Los Angeles.
That is amazing, Donna. What an incredible journey. I know I have a lot of questions, but what I'll do is I'll pass it on to Ashley so we give an opportunity to the incredible curated moderators and panel that we have. And I know they all have amazing questions for you, Donna. I'm just so honored and proud to have you as a dear, close friend of mine. I love you so much and just so happy that you're here with us. Thank you again for joining us. And I'll pass the mic back to you, Ashley. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anna, for taking that first part. So welcome, Donna, and I'm sure we now have a panel of speakers and moderators that will want to ask questions about your journey, your success, your hurdles that you may have come up, because your accolade and your what you've worked on is phenomenal. So my back channels are going crazy, so I'm going to let the panel ask questions straight off the bat, Donna. So we go Lucy and then James, and then if you want to flash your mics, guys, we can work our way down. But Donna, I want to say thank you very much. And anyone here, go and show some Clubhouse currency and give Donna a follow. Put the bell notification on for the appreciation of her being here, sharing her wisdom this morning. So, Lucienne.
Yeah, thank you. Wow. Anna, thank you so much for bringing Donna to the room. Donna, hello. It's so lovely to meet you and to hear your story. What an incredible career you've had. Thank you for giving up your time. My question is, you mentioned that you were offered the job initially and you said no. And I work today with women in positions of leadership and power. And I wonder how many women are still turning down those opportunities because of the male-dominated industry? And I wanted to ask you, Donna, in your career, have you seen things changing for the better in terms of gender diversity and inequality? And what can be done by those organisations to attract the top female talent, do you think?
Oh, Lucianne, there is a huge change now. Women have much more of an equal opportunity. Hollywood is a men's club, the boys' club, and it's pretty disgusting. We all know about the Harvey Weinstein occasion from, I think it's 3 years ago now, and that Me Too movement made a big change. There are many, many more director women now. It was very difficult for women to get in on the artistic side of filmmaking, and that generally came from being a writer, and then you would write something and you could get an opportunity to direct your very own writing. But there were maybe six women that had that position, and now there'll be 60 women that are directing. It's changed a lot. So I have seen a lot of change in that. I don't think anybody will say no to anything anymore, because it's so much more an open arena to come in and be offered special jobs or high position jobs. And I don't know of any story that at the time I was really naive when I said no. I had no idea. I just thought it would be a drag to be working in an office compared to working on film sets. So, and I was, doing a Tom Cruise movie, and he's cute, so it was fun to be doing that instead. So it's very, very different now. Women do have a chance. There's a foot in the door. We have an organization, Women in Film. Even organizations like that did not exist for a long time, but now Women in Film is prominent. There's many chapters around the world for Women in Film. And here in Hollywood, we have Women in Film. Also, New York has a chapter. So there's a big change. Women are welcome. We still get stepped on a lot. There's no doubt about that. If there's five interviews, four will be guys and one will be woman. A lot of times it is, we better go with the girl because we have to fill a quota. I can't deny any of that. I've done my best to always hire women as much as I could when I was in the position of doing so. And that helped a lot. But to this day, I'm very unhappy to say I have no women to thank for as I came up the ladder. It was all men that I had to thank. And generally because I had really good management skills. I'm a Capricorn. I blame it on that. I just really know how to manage things. And I think that the men really liked having somebody that could do all that stuff for them that they didn't want to do. So I kept getting one good position right after the other, and that certainly was to my advantage. But it's all because of management. And I know that you were talking about management before this session now. I listened in on some of it. It's very, very enjoyable. Thank you, everybody. And also, I haven't been able to thank London in particular for letting me do this chat with you this morning. We hit it very fast here. And Anna, thank you. And Ashley, thank you. And everybody, thank you. I'm very invigorated by it. I like this organization. I think the clubhouse is super. So let's keep going on. I'll be quiet and hear if there are any other questions.
Thank you for your answer. What an incredible leader. And thank you for paving the way. Amazing stuff, Donna.
Brilliant. Great stuff there. So we're going to go to James, and then we're going to be working our way down. James, are you there?
I am indeed. God, I thought it was a bit starstruck a minute ago. And then, Donna, you mentioned that your first gig was Raging Bull, one of the best films of all time. And now I don't even know if I deserve to ask someone with such an illustrious backstory a question. I think I should just bow in honour of that film. If people have not seen Raging Bull, go and get it on Netflix or Amazon or wherever it is at the moment. It's one of the best, most eerie, uncomfortable watches you'll ever watch. Is cinematic gold. It's absolutely brilliant, and I'm not like a cinema genius, but I know that's a good film. So thank you for your involvement in that first and foremost. I was going to ask a question about a sort of gender diversity, but Lucien got there before me, and she always asks it much more eloquently and more pointedly than I would anyway. So my question is going to be, for those who are looking for getting their start in the film industry today, what would be the first step? I'm sure you get loads of young kids like, Donna, I want to work in films. I want to be a movie star. How do I do it? Obviously, back in the day, when you were getting your start, you had to physically go somewhere and do something. Whereas nowadays, maybe kids think that the way to do it is making YouTube videos in their bedroom and then just like spamming them out via emails. What would you say to youngsters who are looking to get their start in the film game these days, Donna?
Well, it is a bit of a bummer with the YouTube approach to filmmaking because it isn't valid. It does not, excuse me, it will not get you any work. And people, We're very derisive about it. I think we being Hollywood, unless you've got chops and you have a skill to offer, you really will not be employed, because every job has to be very skilled. And then there are many people underneath whomever the department head is. But I have found so far that just out of school, and yes, you're right, James, everybody says, oh, I want to be in film. I want to do this. And I know how to do special effects. Well, no, you don't know how to do special effects. Because indeed there are programs now and that you can learn a lot of that sort of thing, but people really do not get hired. So for the younger people that are coming out of school, actors have a tendency here in the States to go to New York because they want to be in theater, and Broadway calls to the acting class of people who've studied acting. And then the other people who want to be directors or writers in film or television, there's always been a division as to film is kind of the superior place to be. That's changed. Obviously, COVID has changed the world, but that certainly has changed now because the streaming channels have a great deal of work. They need 24-hour material, so everybody's very happy about being able to get whatever they can on any network. The only thing you can do when you are new, your graduation degree helps you, but it's still that awful same old story of if you got to know somebody. I arrived with knowing absolutely not one person, and there's no agency to go to be able to say, you know, this is what I want to learn or what I want to do. Writing is actually the best way. If you are a writer, studied writing, or just are a good writer, you've got a good story idea. You have to learn how to do character development to write that story. What's a first act, second act, and third act? Even though it's film, it still is that format. A good script is 120 pages. Somebody came to me recently with a 411-page script. And, you know, you just have to glass over and say, I can't even read that because it's not at all applicable to what we do when you make a film. You can't start with 411 pages. So writing is a very good avenue. And then, of course, production assistance. And every department needs production assistance, be it wardrobe, hair, makeup, catering, the AD department, assistant directing department. Every department has many production assistants to come and learn the business. And once again, you just have to get in to do that. But there's no center point to go, a place to go, and all of a sudden be discovered or even be able to get a gig.
Amazing. Thank you so much. What practical and tactical advice. I'm sure Ashley was messaging me saying there's lots of film people in the audience this morning. I'm sure they were writing down vigorously their pens and papers. Thank you, Donna. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And
just James, I love what you said about Raging Bull. You know, there it really turned out to be the film of the century or of the 80s. It was awarded that degree that it was the best film of the whole entire 80s. And it was a magnificent picture to be on. It just rocked me. The worst thing was that the real Jake LaMotta was there every day. And putting up with the real Jake LaMotta while we're doing the Jake LaMotta story was a very tough place to be.
Did you know, sorry, I've got a second question, question part B. Did you know when you were making it, did you know that this was a classic in the making? Do you ever know when you've hit it and you're like, oh, this is special? Do you know at the time, or is it in retrospect, looking back at it, you're like, oh, I can see how this transitioned to being like a cult classic?
No, we did not. It was Scorsese, who certainly had a reputation because of Taxi Driver, and it was De Niro, also because of Taxi Driver. So they were younger filmmakers at that time, and so they had talent. They certainly had been discovered. But at the time we started, we're going to film in color, and Marty seen boxing gloves that were red, and Marty just said, you know, why are the boxing gloves red? And we said, well, Marty, you know, that's the color that they were. This is very authentic. All the research has happened. He said, oh, I can't see that. So we changed to black and white. Things like that happen and become part of the story making about what happened. The stories are just endless. I have so many stories about every movie. But Raging Bull, at the time, we did not know. Bobby wanted to gain weight when he plays Jake LaMotta in the third act, fat. And he insisted on gaining the weight. We wanted to just pad him so you put on a fake tummy and some jowls and it could easily pad him. But no, we had to close down for 3 months, which no film would ever do now, but we did then so that he could go drink malted milks and eat pasta. So he came back 55 pounds heavier and played Jake the way he wanted Jake to be, really fat instead of wearing a fat suit. So it had a lot of esoteric items going for it like that, but we didn't really know that it was going to be a mind-blowing movie, which it really is and still is.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Ash, I'll about to hand back to you before I just kidnap the show. Thank you. What a genuine honour. Thank you very much, Donna.
Pleasure.
Brilliant. Great stuff there. We go Baiju Diamond and then back to Anna and then down the stage. So, Baiju.
Hi, Ashley. Good morning. Hi, Donna. Good morning. Really fascinating listening to you this morning. It's great the question that James asked before, because my youngest child is just going to uni in September and he's studying film production. And I remember way back when, 4 or 5 years ago, my eldest two were like, not sure what to do or sit, but he was so clear. He wanted to be, he goes, I want to be a film director. And he's filtered between editing and stuff. So he's just got a place at university to do film production. So I'll be sure to make sure he listens to this podcast once it's released. My question is this. It might relate to what you just talked about, Raging Bull. All the movies you've worked on, which movie do you think is your favourite in terms of the impact it made in society, whether it's its message or as a result of that movie being released, the impact it had in the wider world? What movie would you say you're most proud to work on in terms of the impact it made in the world?
I do know that answer, and it's not because it's a meaningful movie, and it should be because it had a message or something strong for the world, but of all movies, it was Terminator. Terminator really shook the world because we had a sci-fi script. I do not understand sci-fi. I just have never gotten it. But once I read the script, and Jim Cameron had asked me to come do it with him as production manager, and I thought I'd made a mistake because I don't understand the script, and I don't know that I still do, but it was Terminator, and we made it for the exact amount of money. I think we had $30 left. I was also post-production supervisor on it, so I had Jim in my life for over a year. He's a very difficult guy. He knew what he wanted, but he wasn't Jim Cameron yet. That was the big thing. He wanted to be Jim Cameron, so it was a daily slug it out with him about, nope, we're staying on this budget, we're staying here, we're staying on schedule, and you cannot do whatever you want to do, because it would have been a much bigger film. But it turned out to end up being a small film. It was sci-fi. It shook everybody up, and it's still going on. It was 1984, I think, we did Terminator. So to have that kind of longevity and life and impact, I'm very impressed with that.
Great, Donnelly, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. And I'll make sure my son listens to this podcast once it's released. So I appreciate your time and insights. Thank you, Ashley.
Great stuff there. So, Diamond.
This is Diamond. And Donna, oh my goodness, it's such an honor to be speaking with you today. As I read the list of all of your movies, I'm going through the list of some of my favorite movies of all time. So, wow, thank you so much for your contribution to movie history. Fantastic. As a woman in entertainment myself, I definitely hit my head quite a few times on the glass ceiling. And I want to give you congratulations for breaking through and leading the way as an elite leader. And my question to you is, you know, as a woman in your position, please tell us, what was your mindset? How are you able to avoid the pitfalls that many of us fall into, like imposter syndrome, feeling like we're not worthy or uncomfortable being in a male-dominated situation? I'd love to get your insights on this. Any lessons learned, any tips and advice? Because like you said, there's been a lot of changes in the positive direction in the industry, but we are still few and far between in those top level positions. So I'd love to hear some insights from you so how we can all break through that glass ceiling just like you did. This is Diamond and I am complete.
Diamond, I really understand and agree with you. That glass ceiling is more than just a saying, isn't it? Something that we read about or chat with each other about. It's a real item that happens. I do remember a pivotal time for me. It was my very first week. Well, since Raging Bull was my first movie, I was production coordinator, and I wasn't prepared. I didn't know the business, but I knew I could figure things out. And the guy that I was working for, the production manager, did not want to lead me into anything. He just had an attitude of girls can't handle it, and I'd have to go to him for everything. And I didn't want that to happen. So I didn't go to him for everything. I always was working it out and figuring it out. But the very first week, a guy came by my desk and said, "Hey, Toots, What emulsion are we on? Well, he hit me with a word that I had never heard before. I didn't know the word emulsion, and I had no idea. But, you know, I just kind of looked at him. I had no idea who he was. That was exactly all that he asked. And I said, I'll get back to you on that. He said, okay, and he just walked away. So I called the drugstore and said, when I bring my little can of film in, does that have something to do with emulsion? And the guy at the drugstore said, lady, who do you think I am, Technicolor? And he hung up on me. And I thought, well, that was very rude. But I got the Yellow Pages out. Remember, this is that time instead. It isn't current now. So I'm looking in the Yellow Pages of Technicolor. I went, oh, there's Technicolor. We don't have that in Minneapolis. I'll call these people. I'm Donna Smith, production coordinator on Raging Bull. Do you know what emulsion we're on? And the guy says, hold on a moment. He comes back in 5247. And I said, oh, thank you. And so I realized I could just keep working this out. And I was good at that. That's how my mind works. And when I saw that guy again, I said, oh, sir, 5247. I won't swear, but everybody always swears out here in the industry. And he said, you know, he said, okay. That's not what he said, but he said, okay. And as he walked away, I said, sir. And he turned around and I said, don't ever call me Toots again. And he just looked and he went, okay, fucking it. Oh, there I am. And he walked on, and that was it. But unbeknownst to me at the time, he told the crew, don't be a new coordinator. She's smart. She knows what she's doing, and she's not going to take any lip from anybody. So they told me all that later, and that's how I found out about it. But just stopping him with the word Toots, when I said that, don't ever call me Toots again. And that means honey or babe or any of the J's that men do call women, especially when they're the new and also if they're in a minor position. So that is my actual story, Diamond. If that helps or not, I don't know. But just don't take any lip from anybody. We don't have to. There's no need to. And we're smarter than that. And men also know that they cannot really treat us that way anymore. We're not Toots and honeys.
Yes! Your story's giving me life! Thank you so much, Donna. I'm so proud of you, and I love hearing your story. Thank you so much. This is Diamond. I am complete.
Brilliant. Donna, I want to just reset the room and say thank you for your time this morning, giving you your insights and wisdom. So we're going to be moving on to the next question. David?
Hi, Donna. Thanks very much for your time. And I've just done a quick Google search, and no wonder you've already put those few movies on, because the list is endless. You've got Jurassic Park, Babe, Apollo 13, Schindler's List. So thank you for your contribution and your time today. My question is how long did it take you to get to where you are now? Because a lot of people in society are all after those quick wins, and they think, and when you hear interviews, when they interview actors and stuff, they say, oh, he's an overnight success, but they don't realise that they've been spent 10 years of their lives, rejection after rejection, to get that one movie. So what my question is how long did it take you, it's just for the listeners, and what sort of rejections and how you overcome them?
Well, I'm the weird person. I didn't get rejections. I just kept working. I have never gone to the unemployment office, which everybody does when you're on a film. You go to the unemployment office in your last month of work on that film to get unemployment in case you don't get another job after that. It's always very difficult to find your next movie. And, of course, the other saying that goes with this industry is, oh, you're only as good as your last movie. So I was blessed that I've always been asked to come do a movie next. And I did 15 independent movies. So that probably represents, oh, I think it was like 7 years. I did 15 independent movies. And that's when Universal called. So it took me, it was about a 7-year track, I guess. But I worked the entire time. I never had rejection. I never didn't work. I constantly worked, never went to the unemployment office, and just was grinding out one film after the other. Amongst them was Terminator. That was totally non-union, a little $6 million movie, nothing to do with the studio system at all. So I'm a bad example because I did keep working, and I just didn't go through that rejection aspect.
No, that's a great question. Who would you say you got your work ethic from?
Yeah, being a Capricorn. I mean, I don't know where that comes from. I'm not from a family that's like that. As a Minnesota girl, I just kind of blame it on the fact that I'm Midwest, and I never went Hollywood. I kept my Midwest values. I kept my Midwest head on my shoulders. I left my ego at home. That was a very big thing that I learned. Even if I knew the answer sometimes, or I might have been the smartest one in the room to figure something out at the time, I never went there because of the industry. It's an industry of egos. People can't even walk in the room first. Their ego comes in first. So I watched myself, I think, those first couple of years and not having the answers, but I would just work it all out. So my work ethic just came from my upbringing, which was totally Minnesota. A lot of it had to do with working with Sir Tyrone Guthrie for 5 years. He was not a disciplined man because he was a giant. He was 6'6 in height, and he only wore bedroom slippers every day, and he was this fabulous personality. So I learned how to handle people. I'm going to tell a real quick story about Guthrie because it was Jessica Tandy, and everybody knows Jessica. And we were doing the Three Sisters at the theater, and Jessica stopped one time and she said, "Tony, I was thinking, would it be better if I exited left here instead of right?" And he'd say, "Oh, yes, darling. Yes, all right. Whatever you want to do, Jesse, that's fine." Okay, so we start that scene again. It's a rehearsal. And then Jesse interrupted again. She says, "Tony, I was thinking I should have a book in my lap here." And he says, "Oh, yes, dear. Yes, yes, yes. Do whatever you want. That's just fine. Fine, Jesse." "Okay, thank you, Tony, dear." We go on again. And then she interrupted the third time, and he looked at her. And from the house where we were watching rehearsal, he said, "Oh, Jesse, just say your line and fuck off." And I have never heard anybody talk that way. And she just went, "Oh, yes, Tony, okay." And she accepted that. So I saw things like that happen to a Minnesota girl. To have the experience of working with world people, I was so blessed. So I think my Minnesota days of working at the Guthrie Theater definitely helped me with having a Hollywood career, which I hadn't planned to do. So I thought I'd be a good script supervisor if I ever worked on a movie again, just because of the organization. So it wasn't college. I didn't go to college. So I can't blame it on having a wonderful degree that kept my mind organized. But I'm just an organized person, and I can't find, there's no detail that I'll miss. I know that the devil is in the details. It's an old saying, but it is true. And I just am one of those people that catches every doggone devil in the detail.
Thank you very much. Amazing, amazing answer.
Brilliant. Great stuff there. So I've got to work my way down. If you want to flash your mic so I can see who wants to ask a question. Let's just see the flashes of mics. Is it Lani? Laney?
Hi, Ashley. Thank you so much.
No worries. I apologize. Thank
you. Hi.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. Truly very inspiring. And I really admire how you rose through the ranks, starting off as production coordinator until, you know, reaching where you are right now. I just want to ask, who do you go to for mentorship or advice?
Oh, Anna, help me out on this one.
I know. That's a great one.
It really is. Yeah. I've never had a mentor.
No, exactly. So, no, yeah. Donna is really an odd one in every... I mean, I have been around incredible women from all over the world. And she is literally... When she says she does not have women who have helped her and it's been men, believe her. I think you look up to Lou Wasserman, in terms of how he was at the beginning with you and just the impact he had on you. And I think it would be nice, Donna, if you can share with everybody how he even took you when he wanted to sell the company, Universal Studios, to the Japanese consumer electronics company. How he took you. I think that would be Matsushita. If it would be amazing for everybody to hear and how your interactions with him and the kind of, you know, what you learned from all these very powerful men who took you under their
wing. Well, and Anna is right. It is powerful men. I've worked with Steven Spielberg. I adore Steven. He certainly would be a mentor, but we had equal jobs, if you will, except he's Steven Spielberg and I'm not. And the same with Jim Cameron, these directors that people know. Ang Lee was a huge influence on me in terms of filmmaking. Crouching Tiger. It's such a marvelous film. We did the whole bloody thing in China. It was very, very tough. 10 different moves in China. But Ang Lee at all time was a leader. And I just, again, not a mentor, but just somebody that I admired working with. What Anna's referring to is I had done a movie in Japan called Mr. Baseball with Tom Selleck. And Tom Selleck was a really big deal in America at that time. He still is an actor of note, but he was like the leading guy at that time. And he's very huge. So I'm in China, I'm in Japan with Tom Selleck. And before I went there, I just do what I think is logical things, but I find out that people don't do it. I called the Marriott organization because they're an international hotel. And I said, do you have a protocol department teaching people, their employees, when they're going to go someplace, what the proper protocols are? And so I hired that particular person who helped me out on a personal basis. It wasn't under the Marriott regime, but she came to my place and taught me how deep to bow and to whom and how to order and what not to order and just all the manners to be in Japan. So I always do that no matter where I'm going to go. I find somebody who knows the culture of that particular country. And so I knew that. And then when Lou Wasserman said that he's going to sell Universal, I mean, it was just, it rocked the whole nation. We just couldn't believe that Lou would be selling the company, but he did, and he decided to sell it to this Japanese company. And so he tagged me that he says, you've got to come help me and make sure that, you know, we never make a mistake while we're working in Japan and getting this deal put together. And that wasn't my job at all. But every time that we had to go to Japan, you know, you get thrown on the company jet and you have to go. And I knew those rules. So Lou tapped in on me to help him with all that sort of thing. Didn't go very well a lot of times because Lou was an impatient man, and there's a lot of stories that happen, but I'm certainly not going to get into that. But I just have not had wonderful mentors along the line. I didn't have people that I could go to and ask questions. I think a lot of it had to do with just because I kept working all the time. I never would have 2 months off or some time to rest. And I needed to rest more than anything. My husband really watched me carefully because he knew my fatigue factor. And it's very important once you do a movie. It takes a long time to get the movie done, at least a year. And you need to go rest after that because it's so intense. We work a 12-hour day, never anything shy of a 12-hour day. And most jobs are not like that. So I didn't have a mentor. That really is the bottom line. And thank you, Anna, for helping me out on that, because I don't think I've even been asked that before. But that's just something that was lacking, that I didn't have somebody to go to help me out.
You're very welcome, Donna, of course, anytime. Back to you, Ashley.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Indeed.
Thank you very much. And Efrosini?
Good morning, winners. And firstly, Donna, what an inspiring story that you have. One of my biggest passions was always movies. And my first job was actually doing the marketing for Warner Brothers and Village Films. So what you've done for the industry is truly inspirational. And I would just love to ask you a question in terms of what you see for the industry moving forward, because having seen how much the movie industry has changed now with the likes of Netflix coming on and Amazon Prime and so on, what do you believe is the future of the movie industry?
It's going to be tough. It truly is. As you know, all the theaters closed down for the last 14 months. There's a slow opening of them now, but it's going to be tough. And during those 14 months, everybody was writing scripts. It's the only thing we could do because we could not be on a set. Insurance would not cover anybody filming. COVID was rampant, as we all know. And the movie industry, essentially worldwide, just stopped in terms of making the product. So people were writing scripts, and a lot of scripts got written. And so now there's going to be people pitching. I bet there's going to be 400 scripts a day that Netflix are going to be pitched because of all the COVID time period that are going to apply. The streaming companies are definitely at the front right now because the studios have not been able to recover. And also during COVID, Disney bought 20th Century Fox. We had 6 studios. Now we only have 5 because Disney made a move on Fox and they bought Fox. So the Hollywood industry, which has always been the world leader, that's non-disputable in terms of box office and all that sort of thing. We don't make art movies. We're not good at that. We make so many different types of movies, but the studios are going to have a rough time right now with filling the seats because comic book movies, Marvel, all of that sort of thing is always going to sell. But if you get a nice walk and talk movie, I did a movie called The Hours. It was about Virginia Woolf, the writer Virginia Woolf. And it was marvelous people in it, Julianne Moore, Nicole Kidman, and Meryl Streep. And I don't think that kind of a movie could ever even get a movie theater booking right now, because it's a walk and talk movie. It's telling a real story about something. But everything is very much geared now to the action movies, Fast and Furious, Loki now, and all of the Endgame people. And the movies are just about the Marvel comics, and that's going to always be box office right now. And therefore, Netflix and all of these streaming places, they're going to have wonderful product. We're already seeing it, because once we started, again, making movies and could do things, it's wonderful to be on streaming. You want to be, because people are going to pitch the streaming places now more than they are the studios, because the studios are so far behind not having to had any product for so long. Did that answer your question or not?
Absolutely. And for being a person that's achieved so much in your lifetime, Donna, and being such a role model, not just as a woman, but as a leader, what's next for you?
Oh, what a nice question. I am very much still working. I'm one of the people who is writing scripts during the COVID 14 months. And I was part of writing team, and we have four scripts that were completed. So we're pitching those. But the main thing is now there's a new company that's going to be headed up, a new entertainment company coming to Los Angeles next month in July. And I've been asked to head up that company, which I will agree to. Can't announce it or say anything about it because it hasn't been announced yet. So it has to officially hit the trades and have its announcement. But I will be heading up a new entertainment company, and we're going to do absolutely marvelous product. I like the people that are behind it, and I'm looking forward to this. So there will be an announcement about that coming up in July.
Perfect. Thank you very much, and I look forward to following on that journey.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. So I'm going to go to some more questions. If you'd like to flash your mic. Is it
Gonzalo?
Gonzalo, is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Ashley.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And it's such an honor to be in your presence, Don, and thank you so much for everything that you're sharing. I've heard you say before that your motto is, I'm here to create the atmosphere in which the artist can work.
Yes.
Has this always been your motto? And can you share with us a little bit about why you chose it out of all the mottos in the world?
Well, how very nice for you. I had no idea that that's been published any place, but evidently it exists in place. But I do feel that. That has always been, I think since the very first day I set myself on a stage in a film set. I mean, you have to prep the movie first, so there's no set or anything. But I realized that I think I've been put here to create the atmosphere in which the artist can work. And I stand by that as strong as I did ever, because, you know, when the artists come to work, the artists being the actors in film, so when they come to work, if they've had a bad morning or they have a makeup artist or anything that happens not good, when that camera is 2 feet from their face, they have to be relaxed. They have to be comfortable. They have to be in the mood to do their very best work. So I want to create that atmosphere every single day for every department. But it's very important for the end product, and that is the actors on camera. So I go about that, and crew that I hire, I always tell people, that's why we're here. We're here to create the atmosphere in which the artist can work, and I will always stand by that. I had no idea that anybody knew I'd ever said that. How nice that you've mentioned it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Brilliant. Great stuff there. So I'm just going to work my way down. Melinda?
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you, Ashley. And thank you, Anna, for bringing the amazing Donna here. And can I just say, what you've just said now just reaffirms what every single elite, amazing leader can actually do. It can bring that magic to make people the best they can be. And so it's not just about actors feeling safe and secure, is it? It's about everyone in a position feeling safe and secure. But you've risen to such an incredible level, which is just mind-blowing, that I want to know what really inspires you to keep so inspired to continue along your path. I'd love to know.
You know, that comes under the heading of leadership. I don't mean that to sound cocky. I just absolutely love to see this is what we're going to accomplish. Here's the end game. Here's the end result of what we need. And you start with 120 pages. And you take those pages and you turn them into every single scene, every single thing that the writer has written and what the director wants, and you actually are going to have film at the end of that. I think that's just magic. And I love that so very much, that knowing how do we get to that. And that's the one thing, that's just how my mind works. I go, oh, okay, here's what the script is about. This is what we do first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and you get up to 500 items that you have to do. But I do know how to do that and how much it's going to cost along the way. That's been a big payoff, is that I'm really good at budgeting and knowing what it's going to cost. When I read a script, I don't just read a script for a story. I have to read a script, and as I'm reading it, I'm breaking it down. How many locations did I just read about? How many interior scenes? How many exterior scenes? How many day, how many night scenes? So my mind is breaking it down the whole time. And this sounds, it's not a valid comment that I'm going to make, but at the end of reading a script, I have a pretty good idea that, oh, this is going to take 66 days and be $70 million, or this will be 42 days and it'll cost $32 million. I'm just somehow zero in on that in a way that now, I mean, I've worked for a long time, so I'm better at it all. And I did learn that. I certainly didn't get taught that, but I learned that. I learned that at my dining room table. You know, you bring a script home, and I'd stay up all night and just break down the script to figure out. It's other people's jobs to do it, and they do it. But I also had to teach myself how to do it so that I could understand it and other people's crafts. I think it's very important if you're going to be a leader, you have to very much know what other people are doing with their jobs so that you can lead or you can have input and you can listen to them. It's so important to listen to them and to know how they see the approach to it. So I have just an approach for filmmaking that works, and that's to know what it's going to be and try to always have to stay on budget and on schedule, but always does not happen. Studios have very deep pockets, and the studios will enhance. That's the key magic word. Well, it's going to be $3 million. Well, we'll enhance it. That really pisses me off, because I think it's important, if it's a work ethic, that you should stay on budget and on schedule instead. But no, we have a tendency to enhance things. But you have to support the artistic vision that whatever the director is bringing to it. I want to smack the directors a lot of times, but I don't know. You're getting me off on a tangent. Sorry about that.
That's great. So it sounds to me like you are the one creating the real magic so that everyone else can then do their own magic.
That's a nice way to put it. Thank you, dear.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So what I just want to do for anyone there in the room, we have Donna here in the spotlight seat, being interviewed with wisdom and knowledge in her career, her life and leadership. So could we show a little Clubhouse currency and give Donna a follow? She is in the top row in the middle. It's a way to say thank you. So Anna, did you want to ask a few final questions? And then I'll take the room back and finish up with Donna.
Yes, no problem. That's awesome. Thank you so much again, Ashley, for allowing me to bring my dearest friend Donna here to share her with everyone, your community here. And thank you also for making me again a part of your beautiful community. I feel honored to be here as part of the UK family. Thank you so much. And I love everybody that you have around you, Lucienne, Paul, James, Jennifer, Bayeju,
and everybody else. You guys are phenomenal. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Donna. You've been absolutely magical. And what an incredible leader, an elite leader that you are. And what an incredible human being that you are. Just one of the kindest, humblest people I know that I'm honored to call my friend. Thank you so much for so generously sharing of your time and answering everybody's questions. I appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Winners Club. If you have taken some practical lessons and learnings from some of the most impactful conversations on Clubhouse, then we would love your support for this show by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you download your podcasts.